Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is John Pfeffer, who is the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Previously, he worked as an associate editor of World Policy Journal and has been an international affairs representative in Eastern Europe and East Asia for the American Friends Service Committee. His books include Power Trip, U.S. Unilateralism and Global Strategy After September 11, and Crusade 2.0. And his latest article at Foreign Policy and Focus is It Possible to Undo 2016? Welcome to Background Briefing, John Pfeffer.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you, John. And of course, you cannot, you know, unless you're in science fiction, become a time traveler and roll back the clock. But there obviously is something happening in the UK in terms of trying to roll back the clock on Brexit. And there are some efforts underway in the United States to undo the Trump administration, even though arguably, Donald Trump is doing more himself to undo his own administration than anybody else.
That's correct. Yes, you know, the two big votes in 2016 were the Brexit vote and, of course, the election of Donald Trump. And I think a lot of people had immediate second thoughts the morning after when these unexpected votes took place. But most people assume that they were irrevocable. I mean, after all, there was no plan to hold another referendum in the UK, and certainly the presidential vote was holding here in the United States, and it wasn't going to go to the Supreme Court. But more recently, last week, we saw some evidence that some more serious rethinking of those two events are taking place. The election in the UK, where the Conservative Party did not get the strong mandate that it expected to have a hard Brexit negotiation with the EU. And then the testimony of former FBI Chief James Comey and the Senate Intelligence Committee verifying what many people already knew, which was that Donald Trump was coming perilously close, if not going over the line in terms of obstruction of justice. And, of course, lying about it afterwards. So we have some pretty strong indicators that 2017 will, if not roll back 2016, it will at least take some steps in that direction.
Well, of course, the Washington Post and the New York Times are reporting that the investigation by the special counsel Robert Mueller into the possibility that Donald Trump obstructed justice seems to be working at pace. It's odd that they're leaking this stuff, but on the other hand, it's clearly got Trump rattled. His tweets today are pretty defiant. He's never behaved as an innocent man from day one, which leads people to think that there's something, you know, pretty big that he's covering up. My sense is, and this is basically, I don't have that many sources on this, but a couple of really good ones. My understanding is that what's going on here is that General Flynn has already made a deal with the FBI, and he's going to rat on the people up and down the food chain, and that Mueller was essentially given a roadmap from the investigations they'd already done with Flynn. And this investigation has gone way beyond where people think it is. And what they're doing now is because Trump stupidly created this problem for himself of obstruction of justice. And now they're going to look into what he said to both the DNI and the head of the NSA and his deputy. So I guess, you know, they can build a case against Trump, but they can't do anything about it, can they? I mean, you cannot charge the president with a crime.
Well, and we will have great difficulty kind of pushing an impeachment process through a Republican-controlled Congress House in this case. So that avenue, even though it's the Dems have started that process, won't see any possibilities until or if the Democrats take control of the House after the next midterm elections. So the prospect of Donald Trump actually resigning in disgrace, that's probably unlikely as well, given his reluctance to ever admit wrongdoing and certainly not to resign, which would be a sign of that he was acknowledging wrongdoing. So we are, unfortunately, I think, stuck with him for the short term, though, as you said, he is doing all he can to undercut his own authority, both domestically and internationally. One of the things that I think people should be paying attention to, of course, is the role of Mike Pence, not just as a vice president who's next in line should Trump be removed from office, but also someone who has growing influence in the administration and influence in Congress. And there's been an expectation, perhaps because, you know, in comparison to Trump, he seems like an adult, a responsible person, a reliable politician, that perhaps his politics would be somewhat more moderate than Trump. And I think that's a mistake, that assumption, because all throughout his political career, and even before he became a politician, when he was a radio talk show host, Mike Pence showed rather extreme conservative views. He is very much a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order, as he likes to say, would push a Christian agenda, a very right-wing Christian agenda, both domestically, but also in terms of foreign policy. So any notion, for instance, that a Muslim travel ban would be eliminated if Trump somehow is removed from office, I think is mistaken, given Pence's views on the subject. So that's my concern going forward. And even worse, if we're looking at 2020, I think Mike Pence is a much stronger candidate in terms of unifying the Republican Party and presenting the party an opportunity to continue this kind of politics for an additional 4 years.
And again, I'm speaking with John Pfeffer, who is the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Previously, he worked as an associate editor for World Policy Journal and has been an international affairs representative in Eastern Europe and East Asia for the American Friends Services Committee. His books include Power Trip, U.S. Unilateralism and Global Strategy After September 11 and Crusade 2.0. And his latest article at Foreign Policy and Focus is It Possible to Undo 2016? And we're talking about what can be done to undo Donald Trump here in the United States. And you just pointed out that if you do manage to undo Donald Trump, you end up with Mike Pence. But how do you think this extraordinary North Korean-style cabinet meeting that was filmed the other day, where Donald Trump had every member of the cabinet speak up in the most pathetic, sycophantic terms, praising the great leader, and Mike Pence was the most unctuous of all of them? It was quite disgraceful. I can't see how Pence would come out unscathed if the Trump administration crashes and burns or continues in its downward spiral.
No, I think you're right that the administration as a whole will be tarred by Trump's conduct. And, you know, Trump's tactic all along has been to require utmost loyalty from the people around him, and in fact, choosing people according to that yardstick. Nevertheless, if anybody is to kind of crawl from the wreckage of the administration, I suspect it would be Mike Pence. In part because as a vice president, he probably is not involved in a lot of the day-to-day, not like Dick Cheney was during the George W. Bush administration. And someone who, generally speaking, has preserved his favorability among Republican elites as well as in Congress. Now, of course, I don't have all of the information. We will see whether these inquiries dig up material that basically destroys the reputations of everybody in the administration. But we'll see on that. And as for one last comment, and that would be, it's true that, you know, the cabinet has put up a united front in favor of Donald Trump. And, of course, you know, everybody in the administration speaks favorably of him, or they risk losing their position. But the number of leaks that are taking place, and some very, very high-level leaks, suggest an enormous level of dissatisfaction in the administration. We don't know who these leaks are, but they are continuing despite the efforts by the administration to clamp down on whistleblowers throughout the system.
Well, I've tried to find out as much as I can about Donald Trump, and I spoke to a number of businessmen who've had meetings with him over the years, and all of them say that the guy's crazy. He lives in his own world. I mean, you know, you don't take a psychiatrist. It's just a few minutes with this guy, apparently. You just think, what the hell is going on here? I think that this is a situation like the madness of King George, where the courtiers are covering up for the fact that the king is insane.
Well, I do think that there is a certain, we call it an authoritarian personality when trying to kind of type Donald Trump and his conduct. But if you add in there, you know, extraordinary narcissism and additional pathologies, then the kind of conduct that is perhaps even the norm in some business circles or perhaps in organized crime becomes somewhat singular when it's in the Oval Office. I'm not sure whether that kind of pathology will be, you know, the basis, for instance, of an intervention by his colleagues to unseat him via the 25th Amendment. I think it's not a big likelihood, but I do think that his paranoia and his extraordinary focus on himself will only continue over the next years.
So, John Pfeffer, let's turn then to the other do-over for 2016, and that is Brexit. And it does appear that Theresa May, who's hanging by a thread, the British Prime Minister, who called the election. She had a thin majority of 17 seats in the British Parliament, thought she could increase the majority, called a snap election, didn't realise that the British people were furious that this was all about her and her party and not about the country, and they were sick of elections. And on top of that, she ran a terrible campaign, and then the results were resounding. In fact, many people argue that Labour should have won, that Corbyn, even though he did well, he could have done a lot better. The young people did show up to vote, and they're resoundingly voting to be in the 21st century. They want to be a part of Europe. They don't want to be – there's no nostalgia for the lost empire there. So it's a very generational thing going on as far as I understand. But in terms of the political parties, Labour clearly wants to do a so-called soft Brexit. So do the Scottish Nationalists, and so do the Liberal Democrats. And May's now trying to hold on to power by making an alliance with these far-right-wing Ulster Unionists in Northern Ireland who want to turn back the clock and put up a wall between North and South Ireland. Southern Ireland, of course, being a part of the EU, and the North being a part of the presumably a post-Brexit UK.
That's right. So, you know, on the one hand, the Conservatives did reasonably well in the election. They outpolled Labour, and, you know, despite the fact that Theresa May is a terrible campaigner, you know, they held most of their seats. Of course, they lost their parliamentary majority, which is critical. But as you point out, Labour should have done better. This should have been a golden opportunity. There was so much disappointment and fear connected to the Brexit vote, in addition to general anger about economic displacement and recession in the UK. Labour should have been able to capitalize on that. I think in part it was Jeremy Corbyn's kind of ambivalence about Brexit and about the EU that prevented the party from really making a bold, visionary proposal, which would have been to remain in the EU, but to offer a set of reform proposals that Britain could kind of find allies for within the EU. What, as you said, what remains is Theresa May scrambling to find supporters to hold on to the conservative rule in the UK at the moment. She might even see her Scottish members bolt, because as you point out, Scotland voted very much in favor of staying inside the EU, and Scottish Tories are uncomfortable with a hard Brexit. At the same time, she has to negotiate with those members of the party who still support a hard Brexit and who will not compromise on this issue. So she herself is caught between a rock and a hard place inside her own party, even as she's trying to negotiate some new kind of coalition that will permit her to remain in power. We'll see if she's able to do that, and if Labour is able somehow to come up with some kind of an alternative. But the bottom line at this point, it seems, is that this kind of imaginary soft Brexit is the alternative that people think will result. And that when I say it's imaginary, it's because there's somehow a belief among some Brexit supporters that they can maintain their access to the European market and still stop people from coming over the channel. And that's just not going to be possible. The EU is not going to negotiate that kind of a compromise. So this soft Brexit, in my mind, is in some sense an illusion if it means that the anti-immigrant forces inside the UK declare victory on their efforts to prevent people from coming to UK shores. So that, I think, ultimately will be the major issue beyond the question of whether Theresa May can remain in power or not.
But just in closing, John Pfeffer, do you think that Brexit could sort of die from a thousand cuts? I mean, they haven't even started the negotiations. It's a two-year divorce process. With all the uncertainty now, is there any way for the resistance, which I'm sure, remember, it only barely passed. I'm sure you've got a majority against it by now. It just doesn't make any sense, you know, as much as in many ways Donald Trump's election didn't make any sense. That's why I think why we're having this conversation. There were two great events in 2016 that just didn't seem to make any sense and shouldn't have happened if Cameron wasn't such an idiot in the UK and if Hillary Clinton wasn't such a bad candidate in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that in both cases, we may see the positive effects of bureaucracy. In other words, the sheer effort of negotiating within the UK among the contending factions over Brexit, but more importantly between the UK and the EU, may simply doom any real Brexit from happening. In other words, a Brexit may occur, but it will be such a minor withdrawal, if you will, of the UK from the EU, that it will still functionally remain a member in all but its label. And here in the United States, I think the bureaucracy, too, is in some sense muffling or holding down Donald Trump, making it very difficult for him to pursue his court strategy, his executive orders on travel bans, making it extremely difficult for him to push through a legislative agenda, and even tying up appointments. But as I point out, and as you've pointed out, in this case, Donald Trump is, in many respects, his own worst enemy, since he himself and his colleagues are very much opposed to the administrative state, as they put it. And so it's extremely difficult for anyone to administer if they don't have an administration, if they're fundamentally opposed to administration. So I think ultimately we may see the bureaucrats, these much hated, much maligned people, being the heroes in the next couple of years in thwarting both the hard Brexit option in the UK and the worst excesses of Donald Trump in the United States.
Well, John Pfeffer, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with John Pfeffer, who is the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Previously, he worked as associate editor of World Policy Journal and has been an international affairs representative in Eastern Europe and East Asia for the American Friends Service Committee. His books include Power Trip, U.S. Unilateralism and Global Strategy After September 11, and Crusade 2.0. And his latest article at Foreign Policy and Focus is It Possible to Undo 2016? This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
Time was